Live from New York City, it's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null. We're going to begin, of course, as we do each day, with the latest on health and healing. We're going to talk, for example, about how tomatoes can combat the damaging effects of radiation, University of Manchester says. And then what happens when you drink colas? Well, there's new research on that, and it isn't good, and especially if you have any form of heart rhythm abnormalities, like AFib or tachycardia. And citrus is good, but there's a flavonoid in the citrus that's especially good and can help you lose weight. And Asian spice could reduce breast cancer risk in women exposed to hormone replacement therapy, which is millions of women, about 10 million per day, according to Science Daily. Well, which spice? I'll tell you which spice from Science Daily. Then we're going to do an original, in-depth investigative report today. It deals with vaccine, specifically the film Vaxxed that many people have seen now and around the country. And here's the issue. What weren't we told? I'm going to reveal information today that no one knows about. Not Andrew Wakefield, who directed the film, not even people in the anti-vax movement. Exclusive information from our own original in-depth investigation. Because I knew something was happening when I saw the same words being used in attacking the film all on the same day from a wide variety of sources. Well, in the real world, there's just no way that the editor from Variety could have spoken with the editor from the New York Times, who spoke with the editor from the Wall Street Journal. It doesn't work that way. That meant that there had to be an outside source that was supplying them with information. Who are these sources? It's a lot more insidious than what you can imagine. I'll reveal that today. And in the process of doing that, I'll also share some insights, a very good insight from Brian Shohavy from Health Impact News on the internet trolls. These are actually trained government agents. How do we know that? Well, leaked documents with Glenn Greenwald telling us. Who's Glenn Greenwald? A journalist, constitutional lawyer, commentator, one of the best investigative reporters in the world. And he just found out that when you say something against vaccines, well, you get a whole lot of pain coming your way through the National Security Agency. What in the world does the National Security Agency have to do with vaccines? As I told you, you're going to learn something new today. And also, Robert Kennedy, pro-vaccine. Andrew Wakefield, pro-vaccine. The producer of the film, pro-vaccine. All the people in the film, pro-vaccine. So they just don't seem to get it. So this is a shout-out today to Andrew Wakefield and a lot of other people and a lot of parents. At what point are you going to take the time to do your own homework and realize that saying, well, I'm pro-vaccine, maybe you're on the wrong side of truth, and it's time you aligned yourself. Let's begin. First, most people who want a cola don't think about its health consequence. They think about its taste and its capacity to quench their thirst, and it's a habit, and even the caffeine in them, how they feel after they have it. Caffeine and sugar and high fructose corn syrup, these are all deadly and dangerous. It doesn't matter what beverage they're in. Well, according to the Birmingham Post, the number of cola lovers suffering health issues is on the rise, and they said, adding that there had been food industry push towards an increase in portion sizes, so they took something that was very bad for you in small sizes. Now they're giving you something really bad in very large sizes. Quote, as a result, tooth decay, diabetes, and softening of the bones. Doctors have seen patients suffering from potassium level drops, and this can increase the risk of muscle problems and heart arrhythmia abnormalities, which could be fatal in some cases. Quote, we are consuming more soft drinks than ever before, and a number of health issues have already been identified, including tooth problems, bone demineralization, and the development of metabolic syndrome and diabetes. That's Dr. Moses Elisaf, University of Ioannina in Greece. and that was published in the International Journal of Clinical Practice. So quite simply, in my personal opinion, stay away from all of these soft drinks, period. I mean, if something's toxic, it's toxic in small amounts. We have a big problem in the United States with obesity, but then again, so do people living in China and India. In fact, China and India now have two phenomena working at opposite ends. They have the largest number of skinny people, people who are grossly malnourished. And at the same time, they have an increasing number of people who are morbidly obese, suffering from diabetes. And it's really bad. That's directly due to our globalization of bad food, and which results in poor health. Instead of looking at sustainable development and sustainable health, just look at the statistics. For example, the increase in prevalence of diabetes is skyrocketing in India. And historically, you don't think of Indians as being morbidly obese with diabetes. Indeed, they didn't have that. A new study in The Lancet has found that India and China continue to have the largest number of underweight people in the world, but they also have, they're in the top five for overweight. We still beat both countries, by the way. In fact, we beat both countries even when you combine both countries. So just imagine, you're dealing with 2.7 billion people, and we, with approximately 330 million people, we have more obese. So that tells you something. Now, although almost half the nation's under fives are underweight, the prevalence of underweight children in India is the highest in the world. At the same time, they're now getting the fattest kids and diabetic kids and heart disease kids, and that's they're becoming the capital of under 5 years of age, diabetics, heart disease, overweight. At the same time, they have these underweights. So and why? Partly it's because of Bill Clinton, personally responsible for all these people's injuries and death, in my personal opinion. Why? Because he was the person who sold out and gave us the North American Free Trade Agreement and the subsequent flood of cheap U.S. processed food into the country has adversely affected the health of ordinary people. Western convenience junk food has displaced more traditional-based diets that were healthy. Grain, plant-based diets, low in sugars, and also very low or non-existent meats. Now that's not so. In fact, in Europe, you're seeing what is called the harmonization of food regulatory standards and the Transatlantic Trade and Investment Partnership, the TTIP, will devastate Europeans' health. Now, we have a lot of people right now listening to this program in Europe. You've been lied to and sold out by the puppets who run the European Union, with few exceptions. All of the people in Washington have sold us out, but now you're being sold out because they're going to eliminate, with this treaty, the TTIP, they're going to eliminate all restrictions on imports of foods from the United States. And hence, you're going to adapt a U.S.-style food regulatory regime, which will be stripped of all precautionary principle. Maybe last week, the U.S. Surgeon General, the head of U.S. Public Health Service, National Cancer Institute, came on television, head of the CDC, say, look, we're eating ourselves to death. Wrong foods, meat. No, I didn't miss it. It can't happen because these people would never be able to keep their positions. You cannot tell the truth to the American public if you're in a position of corporate interest or government, because our government is so corrupt at every level. Everywhere we are corrupted. And of course, we know the media cannot be trusted ever. I don't believe anything. I don't read the New York Times. I don't read these publications anymore because I know I can't trust them. Not that they're not bright people, qualified people. There's certainly lots of bright, qualified people. It's just that they're not willing to cover the issues honestly and objectively, in my opinion. So here you got U.S. corporations who want to make it difficult, if not impossible, for European consumers to identify whether what you're eating is healthy or unhealthy, whether it's GMO'd or chlorine-washed chicken or meat from animals treated with growth hormones. You won't have that right. These types of trade agreements represent little more than economic plunder by transnational corporations. they use their massive political clout to alter the texts, and these agreements are done with the aim of eradicating all restrictions and regulations that would impede greater profits. So then what do you get? You get a Western-style fast food outlets that have been soaring in number throughout the country. Pizza Hut now operates 46 Indian cities with 181 restaurants and 132 home delivery locations. That's a 67% increase in the last 5 years. Kentucky Fried Chicken is now in 73 cities in India with 296 restaurants. And McDonald's is in 61 Indian cities with 242 restaurants. It's compared to 126 restaurants 5 years ago. And so all you have to do is look at the Indian Journal of Applied Research. The Indian fast food market is growing at the rate of 35% a year. Well, what do you think is going to happen to people's health as they start eating more junk food? Heart disease, liver damage, stroke, obesity, diabetes, those are just some of the diseases linked to these diets revolving around fast foods with all their sugar, sodium, all their, and then the, when you're eating that, you're not going to be eating healthy foods. One displaces the other. And then the factory farms where you increase the risk of pathogens like E. coli and salmonella that cause foodborne illnesses in people. And the overuse of antibiotics that can fuel antibiotic-resistant bacteria. And the use of arsenic and growth hormones that can increase the risk of cancer in people and the animals in crowded conditions are a breeding ground for disease. And all that comes with the treaties, and all that comes with being told, we're going to do what's best for you. So what can you do? Well, there's a good study published in Science that showed that when you restrict your calories, you're going to live a longer life. You're going to avoid malnutrition. Why? Because when you restrict calories, you're going away from concentrated calories, such as you might find in, for example, a hamburger or bacon or pizza, and you're going towards a plant-based diet because you don't get a lot of calories in lettuces and starchy vegetables and beans. They're all very moderate to low in calories. They don't spike your blood sugar. So when you restrict your calories, you're going to live a longer life. You break off that junk food habit. You then reduce your risk of obesity, diabetes, cancer, and premature aging. Now, there's a study published in Diabetes, as presented in Science Daily, that a flavonoid, those are those wonderful natural chemicals derived from citrus fruit, it can help prevent metabolic syndrome and even weight gain. That means you can help prevent diabetes and reduce the risk of cardiovascular disease. This was done at the University of Western Ontario. And the plant-based flavonoid is called, write it down, Narin, N-A-R-I-N, genin, G-E-N-I-N, narigenin. And they found that it really works great. So when you're getting your fruit and you're juicing it or you're eating it or taking your compounding powders of it, you're flooding the body with this very important narigenin, and that can help lower triglycerides, lower cholesterol, to prevent the development of insulin resistance and completely normalizes glucose metabolism in many cases. So that's all good, and that can save lives. And an Asian spice could reduce breast cancer risks in women exposed to hormone replacement therapy. This is the University of Missouri. And what is that spice that is so popular in India? It comes from the turmeric root, and it's curcumin. So we need to have more women using curcumin each day and or turmeric in your cooking. You can put it into a brown rice dish, a bean dish, or take a capsule of 1,000 milligrams of curcumin. And no matter how you cut it, you're going to help yourself. And finally, from the University of Manchester, a team of researchers have discovered that lycopene, lyco, L-Y-C-O-P-E-N-E, P-E-N-E, that's the red pigment in tomatoes, is extremely successful at guarding against the harmful effects of radiation. So if you're going to get an X-ray or any form of radiation at all, make sure that you're getting lycopene. Now, you can take a lycopene tablet, 15 milligrams, twice a day if you've had radiation therapy, and that can make a difference. So that's the latest on health and healing. We're going to take a brief break, come back, and a special, original investigation that you won't want to miss. Brand new information. Welcome all of you who are listening throughout the world. I'm Gary Nall. This is a special original report that is posted as of today on the Progressive Radio Network as well as my Facebook, and it is fully footnoted. The article is entitled, Why is the CDC Petrified of the Film Vaxxed? Now, America's patrons of the theatric and the visual arts, the lovers of film and dance and music, are among the nation's most die-hard advocates of liberty and self-expression and art civil rights to challenge the failures and wrongs in the social and political status quo. During every decade, during every generation, many of our most memorable artistic achievements and performances are recognized as such because they raise relevant and timely insights that stir controversy. Projected on the screen, films can magically crack the veil of our collective illusion, the mythic, wonderful, wonderland fantasy of self-deception and ignorance perpetrated by the governmental and corporate powers to manipulate a mentally compromised mainstream media. By their very nature, documentary films offer an alternative story to the scripted propaganda streaming across our television screens and monitors. Frequently, they adventure into a deeper reality that so often underlies the mere posturing and veneer of half-truths and lies that take hold of society masquerade as fact. For this reason, artistic truth and censorship are a horrible marriage and have never been suitable bedfellows. The recent controversy over the acceptance and rapid withdrawal of the documentary film Vaxxed, From Cover-Up to Catastrophe, at Manhattan's Tribeca Film Festival, is an alarming case of censorship to protect the guilty and demonize a messenger of warning. The film's director, Dr. Andrew Wakefield, popular scientific consensus has yet to tackle the huge uncertainty gap to identify the people who would then say, we are honest, objective, independent researchers, and here are what we believe are the causes of autism. No. Legitimate medical protocol and integrity demands honest debate on all matters that are scientific and medical and public health, but we're not getting that debate. We have only gotten one side, the official side, nothing else. Everything else is considered heretical and not to be discussed or heard or seen, regardless of the undesirable conclusions. Yet the CDC and Big Pharma adamantly refuse to engage in such a debate and review. How many times on this program have I called out to those who hold a particular point of view, come on this program and debate. You'll be treated fairly and with respect. But at least the public will have a chance to hear your view and a counter view. And they refuse. Therefore, the expurgation of Wakefield's film is a danger step closer to widespread medical McCarthyism. What is equally disturbing is the mass media's outcry to denounce a film before its release. In unison, a barrage of press simultaneously condemned the festival's co-founder, actor Robert De Niro, for his decision to screen Vax at Tribeca. Within a 72-hour period, we witnessed ABC, CNN, MSNBC, the UK's Guardian, Time Magazine, The Washington Post, The Los Angeles Times, The New York Times, Forbes, Vanity Fair, Vogue, Rolling Stone, and Variety, among others, ridiculing De Niro's original decision, then celebrating its withdrawal 2 days later. From Pariah to Messiah, De Niro caved into powerful private interest. It should be comforting to know that all of these publications and news bureaus are on the ready to report simultaneously in mass as this story develops. What we do know is that De Niro experienced formidable opposition to screening Wakefield's film. In a private email sent to many of us who oppose the CDC's vaccination schedule and who recognize the serious scientific shortcomings in the body of studies the CDC relies upon to make its unsound, unscientific claims, non-supported by good science, concerning vaccine safety and efficacy, Robert F. Kennedy Jr. wrote that De Niro informed him that he was, quote, under huge pressure not to show the film, end quote. No mention is provided about the source of this pressure. However, knowing a little bit about the film's real story will bring the culprits to light. A thorough review of the mainstream media's news bits reveals a remarkably similar editorial script. The media's central message frames Dr. Wakefield as a, quote, discredited British gastroenterologist who fabricated research in order to mislead the world that the MMR vaccine causes autism. For this reason, we are persuaded to blindly accept that Vaxxed is simply another example of misinformed anti-vaccine lunacy that will endanger the lives of children across America. Therefore, we should ignore the film and save our money, because our shining experts sitting in the high towers of the CDC have already concluded the vaccines do not cause autism. It is better to go back to sleep and not worry about Vaxxed, because, well, it's not real. On the other hand, this is the story that is likely contributed to the approximately 3.5 million American children and adults with autism today. You're looking at about 7 million total people, parents, all right? You're looking at them, and you're looking at the Vax children, so you're looking at about 10 million people. That's a formidable group if they ever get themselves fully organized and participate against the state and the federal government and boycott. Now, nothing as far as the information in the film is new to this audience. This program was the first in America to broadcast with the Dr. Brian Hooker, who had conversations with the CDC's vaccine expert, Dr. William Thompson. Thompson was unaware he was being recorded. Brian recorded lots of hours, and then transcripts were made of those. And then the movie is really centered around, it's not an anti-vax movie, but it's centered around the CDC, Thompson, and the politics within the CDC. And so we've covered that. I did a 6-hour special on Dr. Andrew Wakefield and how our research showed he was not guilty of medical malfeasance or anything. And indeed, his associate was cleared up to the highest court in Great Britain of all charges. And every one of the critical comments against him has been disproven. So our audience is aware of that years ago. Why is it none of the journalists who were condemning the film or reporters even knew at the time they were doing this the entire storyline themselves? It had never been publicly released. Just a 2.5-minute trailer. You can't judge a film by a trailer. Any journalist who would have seen it, how would they have seen it unless it was in violation of the confidentiality agreements between Tribeca and the producers of Vaxxed? What is rather extraordinary and beyond coincidence is that all of these publications conveyed identical messages and even shared the same quotes and sequential ordering of content and statements. For example, why is a statement by film director Penny Lane, a relatively unknown person with no association whatsoever to vaccine science and policy that I'm aware of, notably mentioned in a significant number of these articles? How does this person's vitriolic comments against Vax end up appearing in The Guardian, The New York Times, CNN, Vanity Fair, and other news reports, all at the same time. The original script was evidently composed by an unnamed third party and distributed throughout these publications for personalized editing and immediate release. Nevertheless, the message remains the same. And even more curious, none of this press accurately addresses the film's central story. During the past 8 years, we have directed and produced 3 multi-award-winning documentaries about vaccine injury, autism and the serious flaws and failures in CDC-approved vaccines. Autism Made in USA, The Silent Epidemic, which is the latest one from a year and a half ago, and Vaccine Nation. Not once has any pro-vaccine person chosen to show us where there's an error. Not once have they debated us. Not once have we been barred from film festivals. The irony of it is that had this film just played, it had played, had a small group of people, and been forgotten. Now it's become a movement. Our films, however, focus more upon the medical science that challenges vaccine safety and efficacy rather than the rampant corruption in our federal health agencies in Washington. Again, there was no outcry over these films being screened at film festivals across the nation. Although considerable venom came forth from the pharmaceutical paid trolls in the blogosphere and the psychopaths in the cult of evidence-based medicine. And while our films are explicitly anti-vaccination, Vaxxed is pro-vaccine. So what might account for this massive media outrage? Remember, Vax is not anti-science, nor is it anti-vaccine. Instead, it presents unquestionable evidence of corruption, fraud, and criminal felonies that is anti-CDC. The film endangers the professional credibility and integrity of the nation's most powerful federal health agency, as well as the private vaccine industry's profits that the CDC protects. If it were simply a visual screed of voices opposing mandatory vaccine, the documentary would have its burst of limited popularity and quickly be forgotten, as so many other anti-vaccines films have. Vax, on the other hand, incriminates federal officials and scientists at the highest levels, including former CDC Director Julie Gerberding, with the intentional cover-up and manipulation of the agency's own research data to continue its public relations charade that vaccines under no circumstances are associated with the U.S.'s increasing autism crisis in our midst. According to Dr. Stephanie Seneff, that I interviewed at MIT, the autism rate can be projected to reach 1 in 2 boys in the next 9 years. In the meantime, the CDC has preferred to seal its eyes and ears to this trend. Instead, it scrambles to find any other culprit or explanation besides the toxic stew of chemicals and viruses contained in the 10 million vaccines given annually to the approximately 4 million American babies at 1 year of age or under. To sustain the nation's vaccine rates, to preserve corporate profits, and to keep Americans convinced that vaccines will keep their children protected and alive, the CDC requires a dynamic marketing and public relations apparatus. And the tentacles of the government's health agencies are today wrapped around mainstream media and the entertainment industry. Unknown to the general public and many of the medical profession is the existence of the CDC's sophisticated public relations media operations. Tax dollars, our dollars, are spent to train journalists about framing medical news and articulately contesting controversial stories that challenge the federal agencies and pharmaceutical industry's national health and vaccine agenda. Here's what you didn't know. This broad network of journalists are employed by mainstream media companies, magazines, newspapers, and freelancers, and they provide the CDC with a daunting army of writers, reporters, columnists, newscasters to commence its bidding. Threats, fear-mongering, and outright hatred written towards vaccine opponents are commonplace mainstream journalistic schemes. What they also share in common is either complete ignorance or denial of the science challenging cherished pro-vaccine beliefs. When we try to understand how and why so many mainstream journalists, writers, and television radio broadcasters can recite the identical mantra after vaccine safety, promulgate identical storylines and share a similar disdain and animosity towards those who question the CDC's claims that deny vaccines' contribution to autism, we can look at the joint CDC association called Health Care Journalists. Never heard of it? You're not alone. It's a fellowship program. Scores of health editors, writers, and reporters throughout the nation's leading mainstream media corporations, publications, MSNBC, NPR, the Los Angeles Times, San Francisco Chronicle, to name a few, on the fellowship website, have passed through the CDC's Atlanta campus for a week's worth of intense instruction in national public health policy. According to their fellowship information, journalists are indoctrinated in conventional health federal policies regarding epidemiology, global disease prevention, pandemic flu preparedness, vaccine safety, and autism. They also receive training in, quote, navigating databases such as the Behavior Risk Factor Surveillance Survey and the CDC's publications. They assist their research and writing. Afterwards, they return to their companies and propagandize the CDC ideology stance on vaccinations and receive notices and scripts about stories to report and release. Ah, there's our smoking gun. How did so many people get the same identical information, the same talking points at the same time? Notices and scripts. And they all dutifully, without question, without any thought of how they've compromised journalistic integrity, they reported this fact. For example, during the 2004 National Influenza Vaccine Summit, then Director of Media Relations at the CDC and spokesperson for the National Immunization Program, Glenn Nowak, presented the agency's, quote, seven-step recipe for generating interest in and demand for the flu vaccines. His PowerPoint presentation outlines a concise public relations campaign along with a timeline covering the flu season for journalists and media agencies to follow in order to increase flu vaccine rates. The outline includes specific periods during the flu season when the media is recommended to induce and increase public fears about the pending dangers of influenza and even possible death. In defense of the CDC's public relations efforts, Nowak publicly stated on NPR that the vaccine, quote, manufacturers were telling us, meaning the CDC, they weren't receiving a lot of orders for vaccines for use. It really did look like we needed to do something to encourage people to get a flu shot, end quote. 5 years later, during the H1N1 swine flu non-epidemic, we observed and reported how the CDC's flu propaganda outline and storyline recommendations continue to be put into practice to the letter by mainstream news sources such as the New York Times, Washington Post, and almost every large television network. Yet that's not all. The CDC's control over the media runs deeper. During a recent interview on the Progressive Radio Network, award-winning investigative journalist Celia Farber introduced an organization that has remained relatively hidden from the public view, Hollywood Health and Society, HHS, headquartered at the Norman Lear Center at the University of Southern California's Annenberg School of Communications. According to its website, the organization, quote, provides entertainment industry professionals with accurate, timely information on health storylines, end quote. Farber describes HHS as both, quote, horrendous and fascinating. It delivers consultation, writers, and scripts for television, Hollywood films, and documentaries. And who offers this expert consultation? HHS's top fundraisers, including CDC, National Cancer Institute, the Office of National Drug Policy Control, and the world's largest private financial source for vaccine development and propaganda, the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. So the takeaway message is, if you see a documentary, if you see a news report, if you see something in a movie or a television show that seems like it's awful pro-vaccine or drugs, it may not be out by accident. Quote, from its own mission statement, in partnership with our funding agencies, we offer several resources, including quick facts, briefings and consultations with experts, case examples, panel discussions about timely health issues, a quarterly newsletter with health updates called Real to Real, and an expanding list of tip sheets written specifically for writers and producers, Tip sheets are available on the CDC website as well as the NCI website. So then, who's writing the scripts? The CDC, the National Cancer Institute, the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, and we didn't know any of this. Consequently, there's no surprise genie behind the media undertaking a collective effort to denounce the Vax documentary. It also explains why these writers in unison condemned an unreleased film. What responsible reporter with any degree of journalistic integrity, in my opinion, would judge a film based upon a 2.5-minute trailer? Yet that's exactly what so many did. If we can agree that the mainstream media's blitzkrieg against Vax is at least in part a CDC PR campaign, that would account for a lot. In addition to the CDC and perhaps even the State Department over concerns that Vax might pose a threat to the country's national security interest, meaning corporate interests and profits, there are also conflicts of interest running throughout the Tribeca Film Festival itself. How do we know? A little research. Gary Barnes at TruthKing.com has identified the festival's deep ties to Big Pharma. De Niro's co-founder of the Tribeca is real estate investor Craig Hatkoff, the brother-in-law of billionaire equity mogul Alan Petrikoff. Petrikoff is the founder of Apax, APAX Partners, one of the world's largest private equity firms that invests heavily in pharmaceuticals and biotechnology corporations, many focusing on vaccines, vaccine delivery systems, and the lucrative business of contracting vaccine clinical trials. Petrikoff's son happens to be the president of Tribeca Enterprises, which owns the Tribeca Film Festival. Among the festival's largest sponsors is the Alfred Sloan Foundation, which has awarded the festival $500,000. Vaccine fanatic Bill Gates is also a contributor. A bigger smoking gun is the presence of Dr. Peter Kim, former president of Merck's Research Laboratories, who was directly responsible for the launch of the company's human papilloma Gardasil vaccine and also the Zostavax to prevent shingles. Dr. Paul Offit's Rotatec vaccine for rotaviruses sits on the foundation's board of trustees. He is therefore intimate with Merck's current president of vaccines, Julie Gerberding, who is featured as a principal in the CDC's actions to cover up knowledge of the MMR vaccine and thimerosal's association with autism and other neurodevelopmental disorders. Again, Vax is not an anti-vaccine film. Both Wakefield and the film's producer, Del Bigtree, have repeatedly done somersaults, push-ups, jumping jacks, and held torches, "We are vaccine." My goodness, at what point will you start doing enough research that you don't have to apologize to the medical community? If you find that the body of evidence, as many other physicians and scientists have done, does not present enough for you to be pro-vaccine, then be anti-vaccine. Is it because you haven't done your research? What is the reason that you would still be pro-vaccine when there's so much evidence to the contrary? But I don't have that answer. That is for you to tell us. The real story about being censored by the federal agencies in the pharmaceutical industry centers upon Dr. William Thompson, a former Merck scientist who became a senior epidemiologist at the CDC's Immunization Safety Department in 1997. In 2014, after a conflict of conscience, Thompson came forth with material evidence proving that the CDC has known for almost 15 years that a casual and causal relationship exists between the MMR vaccine, the vaccine preservative thimerosal, which is still included in the flu vaccine administered to pregnant women and children, and autism. This information was shared during numerous taped conversations with molecular biologist Professor Brian Hooker, who in the past has testified before Congress and has diligently attempted to get the CDC scientific data through repeated Freedom of Information Acts. In addition, Thompson turned over 10,000 copied pages he privately retained of research documents, statistical data, and meeting notes, internal CDC emails, and correspondence to Congressman Bill Posey under legal whistleblower protection. He admitted that many of the most damning documents and data records were destroyed in his presence by his colleagues to assure that they never reached the light of day. At the time, he agreed to testify under oath and confess his personal participation in perpetuating the CDC's frauds and lies before Congress. A recent New York Times article identified Thompson as, quote, a former center employee. Well, since it's become standard protocol for the New York Times to get its facts wrong, New York Times fact checker, Thompson is in fact still working at the CDC. Following his blowing the whistle, he was put on administrative leave of absence, chastised for breaching CDC protocol, and threatened with termination. While on leave, Thompson shopped around for a university position, according to a colleague we spoke to. And during a recent Progressive Radio Network conversation, Dr. Hooker believes the CDC realized Thompson was far more dangerous outside the immunization safety office at the CDC than he would have had an opportunity to express his freedom to expose the CDC obstruction of justice and extend a scientific fraud that could jeopardize the entire agency and perhaps warrant prison sentences for many of its former or current rank-and-file officials. The pharmaceutical industry would also suffer dramatically if the media had reported on the urgently important story that Vax recounts. There would be nationwide public outrage and vaccine rates would likely plummet. Consequently, the CDC retained and awarded Dr. Thompson with a $24,000 retention bonus and promotion. Today, he remains silent somewhere within the CDC's halls of deceit and scandal. And Congressman Posey, after pleading to colleagues on the floor of the Congress to launch an investigation into the volumes of evidence convicting the CDC of widespread fraud and corruption, nothing has been done. Legislators are too indebted to the pharmaceutical lobby. They would prefer autism rates to increase because there is far too much profit to be gained by those funding their campaigns to stay in office. Professor Hooker is also familiar with censorship and has personally encountered CDC vengeance. In 2014, he submitted a research paper based upon the CDC data providing evidence by Dr. Thompson to the peer-reviewed journal Translational Neurodegeneration. Using the CDC's own research, the paper shows a 350% increase of autism among African-American boys who received the MMR vaccine according to the National Vaccine Schedule, compared to boys who received it after 3 years of age. The journal approved it for publication, but immediately confronted CDC demands for its removal. Hooker's paper was suspended and never published due to fabricated claims of conflict of interest. There were none. Although parents are educating themselves increasingly about vaccine risks to their newborn infants and children, the vast majority of Americans retain an unwavering faith in our medical authorities. They can't imagine that our federal health agencies would ever permit our children to be exposed to something unproven or known to be dangerous. Our media repeatedly parrots CDC's claims that vaccines, even when multiple injections are given on a single day, are safe and, quote, do not cause any chronic health problems. Further, they claim that the ingredients contained in vaccines are either harmless or found in such minuscule quantities that they pose no health risks. Well, how about this? Why don't you ask the major physicians who believe that vaccines are safe to give them 10, 15 vaccines, but not to inject them? Instead, put the syringe up and put it all into a cup and let them drink it. Let them drink the mercury, the aluminum, the formaldehyde, the polysorbate 80, the fetal cells. Let them drink that. If they say it's not harmful, that would never happen. Unequivocally, parents are led to believe that there is no association between vaccines and the rising incidence of autism spectrum disorder. Anyone who questions the safety of vaccines is immediately labeled as irresponsible or a quack who subscribes to pseudoscience. On the U.S. government website, vaccine.gov, we read that, quote, a vaccine must go through extensive testing to show that it works and that it's safe before the FDA will approve it, end quote. Well, Dr. Thompson's CDC story presented in VAX shows this to be a patent lie. The William Thompson revelations are vaccine industry smoking gun that many physicians, scientists, and parents of neurologically impaired children have suspected for a couple decades. And although the release of documents to Congress reveals corruption at the highest levels of the CDC, it also further confirms previous known evidence of administrative cover-ups, manipulation of research data, threats and deceit, contracting criminal felons, and pressure upon medical journals to publish falsified studies that are now embedded throughout the CDC's Immunology and Vaccine Division. Two important examples relate directly to falsified peer-reviewed studies in prominent medical journals that are repeatedly cited to discredit vaccine autism associations. Both cases were reviewed in congressional subcommittee hearings, and top CDC officials were interrogated and reprimanded. Today, in retrospect, and with nothing changing over a decade in the CDC and now thousands of documents turned over by Thompson, we know for certain that CDC officials, including Julie Gerberding and the CDC's current National Center for Birth Defects and Developmental Disaster Disabilities, Colleen Boyle, dodged congressman's direct questions. In June 2000, a group of top federal scientists and health officials from the CDC, the FDA, and the British Health Ministry, representing all of the pharmaceutical industry, gathered for a secret, embargoed meeting conveyed by the CDC at the Simpsonwood Retreat Center in Norcross, Georgia. The conference reviewed the findings of a large epidemiological study that showed a direct correlation between the ethylmercury preservative thimerosal, then used in most common vaccines, and the alarming increase in autism cases. A transcript of the meeting revealed a cold-blooded cover-up of the scientific evidence. And during the discussion, CDC epidemiologist Dr. Tom Vera Stratton stated, quote, "I was actually stunned by what I saw," end quote, citing the staggering number of earlier studies that indicate a link between thimerosal and speech delays, attention deficit disorder, hyperactivity, and autism. According to the transcript, Dr. John Clements, then the vaccine advisor at the World Health Organization, stated that, quote, "perhaps this study should not have been done at all," end quote. Subsequently, the CDC conducted a series of further studies to manipulate the data, to whitewash it in order to rule out thimerosal's link to autism. We are told that the original data had been, quote, "lost and can't be replicated." Dr. Paul Thorsen is a Danish scientist who co-authored 36 CDC studies, two of which are widely cited to disprove an autism vaccine link. From 2004 to 2010, Thorsen laundered over $1 million in federal grant money allocated for research, so we are told and alleged. The studies regarding the MMR and thimerosal have now been thoroughly debunked after independent analysis and recent scientific investigation. Thorsen is currently a fugitive. Attempts by the Department of Justice and the FBI to extradite him have been continuously thwarted by the CDC, and Thorsen continues to work openly as a free man, even though he's wanted. Although ethylmercury or thimerosal has been removed from the majority of vaccines given to children, it continues to be used as a preservative in influenza vaccines given to children and pregnant mothers. Therefore, this threat has not disappeared completely. And aluminum compounds, on the other hand, continue to be widely used in vaccines as adjuvants. There's a large body of biological and chemical literature and science showing clearly both toxins associated with abnormal neurodevelopment. A 2004 study conducted by Northwestern University's pharmacy professor Richard Death and research from the University of Nebraska, Tufts University, Johns Hopkins University found thimerosal and other vaccine toxins disrupt the biochemical process of methylation in the human body. And methylation plays a significant role in normal DNA function and neurological growth in infants and children. The group's findings suggest that toxicants introduced through vaccinations contribute to conditions such as autism and attention deficit hyperactivity disorder. Alarming health consequences of aluminum were reported in 2011 study conducted by immunologists at the University of British Columbia. The study revealed that rates of autism spectrum disorder among children are greater in countries where children are exposed to the highest amount of vaccine aluminum. The authors noted, quote, "the increase in exposure to aluminum adjuvants significantly correlates with the increase in autism spectrum disorder prevalence in the United States observed over the last two decades," end quote. A second study, done to the University of British Columbia, posted in 2014, issue of Immunotherapy discusses aluminum's neurotoxic effects on the central nervous system. This research identifies aluminum as a prime trigger for autoimmune and inflammatory responses, altering genetic expression and contributing to neurodevelopmental disorders. Even with all this evidence, mass media continues to parrot the CDC's mantra that the vaccine autism debate has ended. If we believe this, then no further research is necessary. In fact, the CDC remains steadfast in its position to put up obstacles to prevent any follow-up studies to be conducted. Only a thorough house-cleaning of the pharmaceutical shills dominating the CDC, its administration, and policymaking can bring this house of cards down. Vax is an exceedingly important step in that direction. Totalitarian states are more than structures of governance ruled over by narcissistic, psychopathic despots. These states appoint very bright people, often geniuses, into high positions of authority in order to keep the regime's propaganda and lies alive for an uninformed public. They also require an obedient mass media apparatus of crony journalists and writers who can counter and discredit oppositional voices and groups on rapid notice. Sadly, this is the state of today's American medical establishment that no longer tolerates dissension and alternative science that challenges its cherished dogma. And this is mostly clearly observed in the federal protection of bad vaccine science. This suppressive edifice of institutional scientific denialism is unlikely to disappear anytime in the near future. Only an informed and better educated citizenry motivated to express public indignation will lead to efforts to hold every federal official accountable. We will suggest that people in this audience watch our documentary, Silent Epidemic, The Untold Story of Vaccination, because it clearly and completely dismantles the entire argument that vaccines are safe and effective. At the same time, you can watch Autism Made in the USA, that shows you, of all those millions of autistic kids, that their parents were never believed or listened to, and also Vaccine Nation. Plus, there are more than 36 original articles, fully footnoted, on our website on vaccine safety and efficacy. In addition to watching the film Vaxxed, which we recommend as an important contribution, but again, it's pro-vaccine, and it's only anti the lies of one person. There's a whole lot more to that story, and that's why we want you to be fully informed. My co-author today was Richard Gale, executive producer of the Progressive Radio Network and a former senior research analyst in the biotechnology and genomic industries. Thank you for listening. Have a good day.
Love is in the air. Everywhere I look around.